Welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design, the Dr. C podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, or simply Dr. C. Tune in every 2 to 5 weeks, every Monday, as we explore the unique journeys of entrepreneurs. Our podcast sheds light on the paths entrepreneurs have taken in their respective industries. Each episode, we dive into the stories of entrepreneurs, their challenges, triumphs, and the insights gained along their journey. We believe in the power of innovation, resilience, and the entrepreneurial spirit that drives success. Together, we'll learn from a diverse array of entrepreneurs united by their passion for making a difference. Now is the time to unlock the secrets of entrepreneurship. Now is the time to be inspired, to learn, and to craft your own path to success. Join me, Dr. C, as we embark on this journey together.
Now, bankruptcy, losing your business, failing out of school, getting arrested for something, it doesn't have to be the end of the story. It's just the end of a chapter. And there's another chapter to be written. There's many more chapters to be written. And, you know, the story of Abraham Lincoln, how many times did he fail? That is such an example. You know, he could have ended his life at so many different points when he failed. Well, he didn't fail. He just didn't succeed and tried something else. They're wonderful successes, but you've got to keep plowing through. And it's like Edison with the light bulb, right? Yes. He tried 1,000 things that did not work, but each time he found something that didn't work. Mm-hmm. So he knew not to pursue that line. He knew to go look for another line of attempts.
Join us in a captivating episode as we dive in to the extraordinary journey of Michelle, a courageous advocate for suicide prevention. In a bold move, Michelle sold her house in September 2022 and hit the road on her Triumph Tiger motorcycle, covering over 40,000 miles across 30 states and a Canadian province. But this is more than just a journey. It's a mission to save lives and heal her own broken heart. In 2016, Michelle tragically lost two children to suicide, igniting a passionate commitment to turn her pain into advocacy. Founder of Project 24/7, Michelle shares insights on the unconventional approach of her motorcycle journey, exploring personal healing, impactful encounters, challenges on the road, and the profound role of Project 24/7 in suicide prevention. Discover the resilience, emotional navigation, and unique symbolization of motorcycling that shaped Michelle's powerful advocacy. Tune in for a conversation that transcends boundaries, offering advice to budding advocates and a beacon of hope to those affected by suicide. Thank you so much for being here today, Michelle. It is such a pleasure to have you. And I just really want to dive into your journey. I know you sold your house, you're embarking on this motorcycle journey to save lives in a bold and unique way. What inspired this unconventional approach to advocate for suicide prevention?
Well, my journey actually started way back in 2016 when two of my children took their own lives. We lost my youngest son, Thomas. He was only 18 back in March. And then less than 30 days later, my oldest son also took his own life. So in less than 30 days, I lost half my children. I still have two children, the youngest of all, the princess, and then the middle son. But when I lost the children, I kept plowing through. Oh, I'm fine, quote unquote, right? Air quotes, fine. But by 2019, by the fall, my brain just couldn't take it anymore. And I was put on FMLA. And when I came back after 12 weeks, I was allowed to go back to work with some severe restrictions, half days, less stress. And at the end of the month, the company I was working for said, we can't continue to accommodate you like this. So they let me go. So I lost my job. 6 months later, I got another job. After 6 months, they let me go because I couldn't do the work. So I ended up applying for disability and I still haven't received it. I got my initial denial just a month ago. So 2.5 year process to get denied. And now I have to put in my appeal. Mental health typically does not get approved the first time through. You have to apply for an appeal at least once to get your mental health disability. So there I was with no income and a house. So I had to sell my house to have money to live off of because I couldn't pay the mortgage.
Right.
And that was the fall of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Well, rewind to the spring of 2022, I had this really neat idea. A friend had called me out of the blue, just a colleague from networking, not really a close friend, just to check on me. And when we had been talking previously, he said, "Hey, I'm there for you anytime." Well, a networking colleague, you don't think of calling at 2 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
But he called me in the afternoon, just out of the blue to check on me. I thought, you know, he really did mean it, anytime. He really wants to know that I'm okay. And that got me thinking, you know, when you're that depressed, number one, if you make it as far as scrolling through your contacts, you're picking through contacts. You don't have somebody designated to call.
Right.
And number two, you're going to make excuses not to call. So I got the idea for Project 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where the 24/7 comes from. You create a group in your phone and you label it 24/7. So the first piece of friction it removes is you're not scrolling for contacts. You've got designated people. The second piece of friction it removes is those excuses because you labeled it 24/7. These are the people who are going to be pissed off at you at your funeral that you didn't call them.
Yeah.
So that's your reminder. They want you to call at 2 in the morning. They would much rather hear from you than not hear from you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the idea. So when I had to leave my house behind, I was like, wait a minute. I have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a motorcyclist for decades. And I thought, you know what? I've always just wanted to get on my bike and ride. And for my mental health, that's the best thing for me, mm-hmm. is to let go all the stress of home ownership. You know, you got to fix this, you got to fix that, you got to pay this bill, you got to pay that bill. There's a lot of stress involved with owning a home.
Yeah.
So I just offloaded all that stress, got on my motorcycle, and started traveling around the country. I had stickers made up to open conversation, and 988 as the suicide hotline number had just rolled out to Georgia as one of the last states just before I left. So on my sticker, I have 988 suicide hotline number and then Project 24/7. And that's the name of the nonprofit. Project247.org is the website. And that's what I do. I now travel all over the country and I promote this suicide prevention tool.
What an incredible journey that you've been through to really be able to help so many people, traveling all over the world, having that ability to, so you don't have all the stuff that comes with owning a home. It's definitely a lot, but that freedom and being able to travel so easily on a motorcycle. I'm like terrified of motorcycle, but margin. But I think it's so fascinating that freedom, like just even when you were speaking, I just envisioned you like on the motorcycle, going place to place, being able to speak in so many aspects of schools and everywhere else you do speak to really bring awareness to suicide prevention, because I think it's something that we don't really talk about enough. And one thing that we don't talk about enough is the families that are impacted. And I know that's something that I really wanted to touch on. I know you want to touch on it. So people listening can really understand that it's not just the person who does commit suicide, but like all the survivors around them, their family members, their friends. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Just the other day, I reached out to one of Thomas's friend's mother, and she said, "Yeah, you know, JD is still struggling. This is almost 8 years later, and one of his close friends is still struggling with the loss." And that's just a friend. When we lost Thomas and Nicholas, my daughter, Natalie, lost her two best friends. They were very close. They were her best friends. And she ended up in intensive outpatient twice, inpatient hospitalized for her mental health twice.
Mm-hmm.
She was diagnosed with lupus within a year of the boys passing. And I understand that that manifested as active because of the stress of losing her brothers. So she always had lupus, but autoimmune diseases are triggered by stress. And so now she has lupus to deal with every day for the rest of her life. She has to monitor her diet. She can't have too much sugar. That's one of her triggers. She has to get enough sleep. That's definitely something that's important. And as a teenager, she was only 15 when she lost her brothers. Those are the important years of high school when they kind of figure out who they are, what they want to be. And she got robbed of those years because she was constantly hospitalized and struggling, really struggling. And sometimes she still struggles all these years later because she lost her brothers. And I'm so proud of her for her strength. I'm sorry that she had to learn all these lessons.
Yeah.
But here's an example. One night she came to me as I was asleep. She woke me up and she had a bottle of pills in her hand. And she said, "Mom, I have these in my hand and I was going to take all of them. Take me to the emergency room. I need help." That takes a lot of strength. But some of the highest risk people are the friends and the family of those we've lost to suicide. It's like little dominoes falling. So, you know, having more than one person die in a family is not unheard of. It puts everybody in the surroundings at risk. And then there's all the blame and the guilt. Not that we were blaming anybody else, but we blame ourselves. The what ifs and the I should have, I could have. And for example, my remaining son, the middle son, Rustin, he was in the military. He still is. He's a captain in the Army now and doing well. He's married with two little girls. And that's wonderful. But initially, his response was, "I'm trained to see the signs. Why didn't I see it? That's part of my training. I'm supposed to see this."
Yeah.
So that was a struggle for him as well. And I'm so proud of him. He's come to terms with it and worked through his grief. And he's doing really well. But my grief, I developed a heart condition, and I now have to be monitored every year to see how my heart is doing. So it impacts people physically as well as mentally. And my neuropsychologist described it to me, you know, I'm a gearhead, so she described it like an engine. It's a two-cylinder engine, and I'm only firing on one cylinder because the other one is consumed with grief. I can only focus for 5 minutes at a time, and then my mind wanders. And I wasn't aware of it. I just thought I had memory issues. But it's actually my inability to maintain focus.
And I appreciate you sharing this. I think it's important for people to realize how much it can impact people, and it impacts everybody differently. And there's no right or wrong way in order to grieve. And it never goes away, that pain. It just makes it more manageable, some days a little bit easier than others, but knowing that it's never going to be closed, that pain, you're never going to get rid of it. It's always going to be there. But the legacy that you are putting out there for both of your boys and all those other families, the advocacy that you do for families, it's just so remarkable. I am so in awe of everything that you are accomplishing and will continue to accomplish. And your journey isn't just about saving others, it's your own heart, just like what you were talking about with all your family members, all their friends, everybody that has been impacted just from your sons as well. But how extensive has travel and advocacy work contribute to your own personal healing?
Well, I found going through this journey that there are really three pieces that add up to resiliency. And the first one is people. I have so many people all over the country who are kind enough to let me stay with them, good friends, and support me. And those 24/7 people that I can call in the middle of the night when I'm struggling. So that has helped. And peace. So many people don't know how to find peace. And I was blessed with motorcycling. I call it wind therapy.
I like that.
And when you need to just scream and let it out, you can go in the countryside and scream in your helmet and nobody calls the police. And then the third thing is purpose and finding the purpose of helping other people reach out so that other families don't struggle like we are is what keeps me going.
Yes, and it's turning that tragedy into advocacy. And I think that's a big part of just anybody who's lost anyone to suicide is a profound tragedy that cannot really be put into words, that significant loss and that void that you have in your life. But can you share a little bit about the turning point when you decided to channel this pain into advocacy to create Project 24/7?
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting moment. It was when I was talking to the case manager at social services, and the best idea she could come up with was, some people I hear buy vans and other people help them convert into a living space. Being homeless in a van was her best suggestion. And as I was hanging up the phone, that's when the light bulb went off. That's when the little connections all came together. I have a motorcycle. I have a mouth that can talk. I have lots of people in my circle that I can reach out to. And there are other people I haven't even met that I might be able to reach out to. And that's what solidified my determination to start Project 24/7 as a nonprofit and spread the word.
I love it. And it's crazy that it was that phone call, but that phone call allowed the bolt to go off, the light bulb, and understanding, wait, this can be something that I can really give back, but also help with your own process of healing and just really connecting through stories, because you know people all over the country, the world, and just all the stories that I'm sure you have heard, but traveling through 30 states now, if I'm correct, and sharing these stories must have been such a diverse range of individuals that you've been able to meet on all walks of life.
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
And can you highlight what maybe a particular story or encounter that just deeply resonated with you and just reinforced the mission that you're on?
Yeah, just handing the stickers to people, I get all kinds of thank you, I needed to know someone cared, tears, hugs. One story that really resonates and I keep going back to is a gal auto shop where I had to purchase something, and I handed her the sticker and she started to cry. And she said, "You see that car outside? That's my mom. I'm almost at the end of my shift. She came to pick me up. I attempted the other day and she doesn't know. Can you please tell her for me? I'm not strong enough to let her know that I'm struggling."
Wow.
That was huge. That was huge. That was really impactful. And then if I can share one more story.
Oh, please, please.
I presented at a networking group, and the next time I came back a few weeks later, a gentleman flagged me over and said, "Hey, I need to share something with you." And after hearing me speak, he was prompted to reach out to a friend of his band at his wedding, in fact, and he hadn't been able to connect with him. This friend was struggling. He knew he was struggling, but every time back home up north to try to connect, would make plans to connect and he would flake out. And his wife said, "You know, why do you keep reaching out to this guy? Yada, yada." After hearing me, he said he reached out with a video message just to try one more time. "Hey, I know you're struggling, but I'm here for you," was essentially the message. And he sent it on Friday. And then on Sunday, the guy called him and said, "Hey, you saved my life. I was going to end my life on Saturday." So I know of at least one life with my message, and I hope there are others that have been prompted to reach out and get the help they need, that their friends can circle the wagons once they've reached out to one friend. The rest of the friends can then be notified and can check up on that person more, be supportive, offer more ideas for ways out of a pickle. You know, sometimes we get backed into a corner, we think we're painted into a corner. But there is a path out. We just need help finding it.
Yes, absolutely. And what profound examples of both individuals and the heartbreaking situations that could have happened but didn't, because you being there, talking about it, bringing awareness to it. And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times it's almost our strongest friends that don't talk about what they're going through, and they're the ones that we might need to check on a little bit more, even if they, like, we know people are struggling, but there's a lot of people that we might not know, and we can't know all the signs, but we can just show up. And I used to talk about this with my clients as well. It's just being able to be aware of the signs, but you can miss them. And just being supportive, showing up, knowing that they're loved and cared for can make a huge difference. Just like the second example you gave, the friend reaching out and the video message and how touching that was. And that individual is here today because of just connecting with you originally, but indirectly having that impact as well. And it's just beautiful how many lives you're saving and will continue to, and Project 24/7 will do in order to really just help the masses, and knowing that there's always a way out, that you don't have to turn to suicide. There are so many people that care and love you. It's just a matter of asking for help. And I know that can be so hard for so many individuals, but you're not alone. And 24/7 is exactly what that is about, knowing that people have people in their corner that want to see them succeed. And there is always a positive way out to get out of the pickle you are in. I like how you use that word, because there is a positive way to get out of a situation that you don't have to turn to something that's permanent, because our feelings are temporary. But when we do something, an action can be permanent, and it doesn't have to be.
You know, bankruptcy, losing your business, failing out of school, getting arrested for something, it doesn't have to be the end of the story. It's just the end of a chapter. And there's another chapter to be written. There's many more chapters to be written. And, you know, the story of Abraham Lincoln, how many times did he fail? That is such an example. You know, he could have ended his life at so many different points when he failed. Well, he didn't fail. He just didn't succeed and tried something else.
Exactly. And it's knowing that these challenges, we're going to have obstacles and challenges along the road. I don't think there's been one day where it's just like perfect and, oh yeah, this is great. Especially when you're in business. That doesn't really happen a lot.
No, no, there's something. There's always something. They're wonderful successes, but you've got to keep plowing through. And it's like Edison with the light bulb, right?
Yes.
He tried 1,000 things that did not work. But each time he found something that didn't work. So he knew not to pursue that line. He knew to go look for another line of attempts. So, you know, it just, okay, that didn't work. What else can I try?
Yes. And even with the challenges of building out Project 24/7, what have been some of the challenges? I know we've chatted about that, but if you could share,
yeah.
if somebody is trying to build a nonprofit, what has been some of the roadblocks for you?
Well, one of the first bits of advice I would give is don't try and fill all these papers out yourself.
That's number one.
Yeah, get an expert. So I had a lawyer who made all the paperwork to create the company, but then I tried to get our EIN by myself, and I selected the wrong company type. So with that EIN, we wouldn't have been able to apply for a 501 because of a checkbox, one little checkbox that I messed up. So I had to totally start over. Mm-hmm. And I found an enrolled agent accountant who does this, who applies for 501s. And she knew all the pitfalls and knew how to fix all the mistakes I had made along the way. So find the experts. That would be my first thing. And then the second thing that was a real obstacle to me, because I travel, I needed somebody to be Johnny on the spot and do all the day-to-day running of the business.
Yeah.
And the person that I found became ill, and I was out west, and I wasn't coming back for 6 months, and I had no way of finding somebody else, and I didn't run into anybody else in my travels who could take on the day-to-day. So we got 6 months behind schedule on getting the 501 started. So that was a huge thing. So reaching out to the right people and getting a dedicated team is so important. And those are the pitfalls for me, getting the right professionals and the right people in positions.
Those, I think, are very monumental in being able to make things move forward. By learning from what you experience, so other people that are doing such amazing work in the communities and making such an impact can have that faster and not have to be held back by paperwork or something so crazy like that. It's nuts.
I know. I know, it was so frustrating.
Oh, I believe that. And I'm just curious because of the impact you are making and since creating Project 24/7, what impacts or success have you witnessed in terms of suicide prevention and supporting families that have been affected? I know you've mentioned two stories already, but more so on.
Yeah, just the other day, I was at another presentation that I did, and a mother came up to me and said, "Hey, my 16-year-old, I'm seeing some of those signs. What do I do?" So I referred her to her school's counseling department, and that not to ignore the signs, get her daughter help right away. And it's better to err on the side of caution and send her to a therapist when she's really fine. She's just being a teenager, right? Get her therapy because you never know. You just don't know. So don't ignore those signs. And I've had lots of conversations like that with people coming up to me and picking my brains, if you will. What signs did you see? And you see them in hindsight much more easily than you do when you're right in the middle of it in the day to day. So, referring a lot of people to their school's counseling department for guidance and letting the counselors know that you're seeing these signs so maybe they can help intervene.
Hi friends, today's video is so special because it's brought to you by our incredible sponsor, Love Sorrow, where your stories meet craftsmanship in the most beautiful way for both men and women. I've recently discovered their custom fine jewelry design. Trust me, it's a game changer. Check out these amazing pieces being delicately crafted. Each one tells a unique tale, and the best part, you can be a part of the design process. With over 50 chain styles crafted from solid metals, you get that timeless piece that is permanent and seamless without a clasp. Your piece, your style, your story. Love Sorrow, our sponsor, is offering you a chance to enter a world of understated enchantment. Head over to Love Sorrow's store locations in Los Angeles, California, and Boulder and Cherry Creek, Colorado, to begin your journey. Let's do this together with Love Sorrow. Now back to the show. Now, that's a very important aspect because I used to work at an all-boys Catholic high school when I lived in California, and a lot. I had one time one of the teachers brought a student to me that was having the thoughts, and I was able to help him through that. But the mom wasn't really for therapy, but the student was. So I had to do a crisis intervention and give him the tools and make sure and knew there was resources, the love lines, the hotlines, all of those things to make sure. And I mean, he was thriving by the end of the school year, which was great, but they were able to catch those signs, some of them. And sometimes it's nothing, it's just the thoughts and there's you, but you can in that moment. But I think sometimes, at least I was a little limited when I was in the school setting, but being able to refer out so they can have continued care, whether it's outpatient, inpatient, whatever it may be. But I think it's so important to know the resources are available. You just have to know the school counselor or outside therapy or inpatient, whatever it is. But knowing that you're there to support them and get the help that they need, because it could be nothing, but it could be something. And I rather, of course, err on the side of caution because you just never know. And that's amazing that so many parents are talking to you and asking to pick your brain and getting the help that their children need, even if it's just, I'm being a teenager, but you just never know. And it's better to
No.
have the help versus not.
Absolutely. And so many parents wouldn't think of reaching out to the school's counseling department.
Yeah, that's
So I find that's huge.
true.
Getting the parents on board to find out what resources are available for their child.
Yeah. And I'm curious, this just popped in my head because I know not every, and I don't know this, but I know you speak at a lot of different schools, high schools in particular. Have you found that most of the schools that you have spoken at, that they do have a guidance counselor or a therapist on staff or anything along the, or psychologists, do they have that typically?
So I'm in conversation with several school districts. We're brand new. Project 24/7 is brand new. So I haven't done the presentation, but in talking with the school, for example, there's a county here that I'm talking to near Atlanta, and they have an intervention team, if you will. And it's an advocate at each school that the kids are told, this is your advocate for mental health. It's not just the counseling department or the counseling team. There's an advocate for them to reach out to. There's a school district in Tennessee that I'm working with, for example, that has full assessments, health that include mental health. And they assess all their kids every year, at least once a year. They have identified high blood pressure. They have identified early signs of glaucoma. They have identified so many things that have saved lives in these kids. They found a heart condition in one of the kids. So yeah, the support that the schools provide is a wide range of nothing to everything. And every school district, even in and around Atlanta, every school district is very different in what they provide or don't provide.
I didn't realize how wide a variety it was, because I know like most of the school settings that I'm very familiar with are Florida and California and a little bit of Colorado. But I'm just curious because I know certain areas have more resources versus others might not have as much. But that's why I think it's so important that you are in the works of getting out there and speaking and getting this message across, especially to high schoolers, because that is such a vulnerable time and mindset, because our brains don't fully develop till we're 26. Technically, I could be off on the number, but last time I checked, it was 26. So you're just very impulsive. Even when I worked at the all boys school, boys tend to be a little bit more impulsive than girls, just psychologically, not to generalize, but just from what I know from my experience in working in school settings. I think that's really imperative to understand that we don't know what a decision can do to us if we aren't fully aware of that, especially those ages. But I'm so glad you're really engaging in those communities and just understanding how valuable that is and being able to approach it in your travels. But what strategies have you proven effective in spreading awareness? I know you have the stickers. What else have you been doing in order to bring awareness to everything?
Really just the conversations that I'm having, sharing on podcasts like yours.
Yeah.
And speaking at local groups, networking groups, and service organizations and everything. I take every opportunity to soapbox as much as I can to spread the word. School systems, it plugs in perfectly with what they already do for their suicide prevention programs, their suicide awareness programs. They typically have at least one person or hopefully a group of people sometimes that they encourage the kids to reach out to. But what kid wants to walk into somebody's office at school, especially if they want to talk about somebody that they see struggling? So that's where Project 24/7 plugs in to existing programs to tell the kids, okay, put these numbers in your phone, and this is how you can text or make a phone call without your friends knowing. And you can do it, you know, quietly, maybe even anonymously, because the school isn't going to have their phone numbers always. So you can give the school a tip, hey, this person is struggling. And the whole school, all your friends aren't going to know you're the one that ratted somebody out.
Yes, I love that it is just tying into what's already being done, or because a lot of kids are embarrassed to go to a therapist at school, or just like, oh, I don't want people to know that I have any problems. That was an issue for me. Like, I wouldn't go get the students. I would like put a slip and then they would come to my office. But then people started recognizing the slip and like, where are you going? And like, at first they were a little embarrassed and they were okay. But I think part of that is knowing that there's other resources. And I think that's a major key of everything that Project 24/7 is doing, knowing that they have can call in time of crisis or just needing to talk to somebody. And, you know, we were talking earlier about resilience, and the reflections is a key element of your journey is resilience. Everything you have gone through, everything you've endured, and just continuing to move forward. How do you define resilience, and what advice do you have for individuals and families that are going through what you have gone through?
I define resilience as a way of living that prepares you for the crises, big and small, that go on hand in hand with being a human being. So I go back to those three things. Have that group of friends, those people that you can rely on, and build those relationships by being there for them. And that also helps you see what it's like to want to help and not know what to do. Because then when you're on the receiving end of their generosity, you understand by asking, you're helping them. So being in the position of being the helper, not knowing what to do, actually makes it that paradigm shift easier to understand. And then you've got to work on yourself for peace. Try yoga, try prayer. If you don't know how to find peace, you've got to figure that out. And then find purpose. So many moms, when they're empty nesters, for example, right? Or men used to be so tied up in their careers that when they retired a couple of years later, they just die. Remember that? Mm-hmm. It used to be a thing. Yeah. But now people are finding second careers. Women are throwing their husbands out and making them do Uber, you know, get them to do something to be active.
Yeah.
You don't have to have an idea to start a nonprofit. All you need to do is look around, and there's so many people that need help, so many organizations that need extra hands. If the first one has plenty of hands, keep looking for another one. Mm-hmm. There's lots of organizations, the Senior Center, or the Boys and Girls Clubs, the YMCA. There's so many wonderful organizations out there that need volunteers. So if you don't have purpose in your life, go find one. Go find a purpose, because there are so many options for making purpose in your life. Purpose is important.
Yeah, just even thinking about what you were saying, when people do retire and they don't have that purpose, I think that's what drives us every day, knowing we're helping in some capacity. Because I think at the end of the day, all of us are human beings, and we want to be able to help in some form or fashion. Maybe how we help might look a little different, but being able to have that purpose is huge. And I'm so glad you brought up the self-care practices. What are some of the self-care practices that you have really adopted in the last few years?
Letting go. That's a big one for me. Knowing when to let go of something. Micromanaging my daughter. I had to let go of that and acknowledge that she's an adult. So that's a self-care thing, letting go. There are so many things that we hold on to that we think is something that we need to do. But as my good friend Judy would say, it's not your brick to carry. So look at what you're doing and what you're taking ownership of, and evaluate, is that really your brick to carry? So that has helped a lot. And being kind to myself and giving myself grace, that's really huge, because nobody is a perfect parent.
No.
And we all are human. And no parent ever has said, I'm going to go ruin my child's life today. I'm going to be awful to them. That's not the intent. The intent is to be a kind and loving parent and do what's best for them. So you've got to give yourself grace to be human. We do make mistakes, but, you know, that wasn't our intent. And how you intend something, even if you think you did the best, the reception of it, the perception of it from the child might be totally different. Or something you think that you did terribly wrong, they don't even remember. So it's the perception of it that you can't control. So you got to let that go too. Just do your best.
Those are phenomenal practices, and it's not talked about enough. And I feel like that's a theme here today, just things that aren't being talked about. But a lot of times with self-care, I believe it is compassion, grace for yourself. The things that aren't so tangible, like a spa day or going for a walk, all those things are nice. But I think it's the things that are a little bit less obvious, like letting go and being able to not carry all the bricks. Like, there was a saying I used to say to clients when they were overwhelmed, and it wasn't my saying, it was something I had heard from a supervisor, but they have like a backpack and it's full of bricks and they're walking up a mountain, and it gets so heavy unless they take one out each step, being able to release that and letting go, because that can be so detrimental if you are carrying everybody else's stuff versus letting go what you can't control and focus on what you can control.
Absolutely. So many things that are in our sphere that we think we're responsible for. And we just need to take a step back and evaluate, am I really in control of this? Can I make a difference? Or should I make a difference? There's that too. Sometimes you need to let someone fail so that they learn the lesson.
Yeah. It's hard, but Gotta do it sometimes. And it's family forward, as I like to say now. All the lessons. But, part of just everything that you have built, do you have any advice for budding advocates that really want to make a change in this world? They might want to start their own nonprofit or something similar. What would you say is really important for them to really, the idea of just like the advice that you would give them based on your experience of building a nonprofit?
Starting a nonprofit is hard and it's going to take a long time. So be prepared for that. But also search if there's already somebody doing what you need to do or you think is important to do. It might be easier and quicker if you partner with an existing nonprofit. What you're doing might piggyback well off somebody else's existing nonprofit. And there you already have a source of funding and support, a support network, donor network. So you can actually get your purpose running faster. So look around for partnerships. And if you're going to start a nonprofit, make sure to get the right people in the right seats before you start running. The first thing you need is the right people in the right seats. And dig out that expert advice. And if you're in the Atlanta area, I'll be more than happy to give you a referral for someone who can walk you through the 501 process. She's amazing, Haley Johnson. And if you're in another area, just look for an enrolled agent that specializes in nonprofits and look for a lawyer who specializes in nonprofits. Don't try and do it yourself. Because it's more expensive to do it yourself when you make a mistake. Don't try and save money. Work with someone who will work with you and bill once you make money.
Really good advice. I think it touches on a lot of important aspects of not doing it yourself. And when we do things alone, we sometimes can miss things or it doesn't go exactly how we want it to. But being able to have a lawyer that specializes in nonprofits versus just any lawyer, but knowing who's in each seat. And I love that you said that because I think that is key from what I've heard. I've never built a nonprofit myself, but I do know people in the industry. And I'm really curious because I just know this is going to explode and help so many people. But what are your future goals and aspirations for Project 27, 24/7?
My goal for Project 24/7 is to turn it into an app so that removes even more friction. It makes it easier for you. And it'll auto dial those contacts until one after another somebody is available. And if one of your friends isn't available, it'll go to the suicide hotline that you pre-selected when you set up the app. That's an ambitious financial goal. So that's what I'm hoping to get started. I'm also hoping to, forget hope. I am working to build Project 24/7 so that it's self-sustaining. And me as the face on the Wheaties box isn't everything that's making it go. I want to train more people to do presentations for the schools and for other service organizations and just grow it so that it's running without me. So Project 24/7 is bigger than me and we're getting there slowly but surely. We're in our first year, so it's still many steps to go. A lot of climbing up the hill yet, but this is the path that we want to grow so that I can just be the founder in the past and not so active because I'm not going to live forever. A little old lady with a cart full of chestnuts or the hot dog vendor can run me over tomorrow or the truck can take me out and T-bone me. Who knows? So I really want it to be able to continue. It's bigger than me.
I love it. And I can't wait to see it just thrive and grow and just impact so many lives. And what is something you want to leave the audience with today after everything we have shared and talked about? Is there anything really important that you want to share with everyone?
No matter what, no matter how bad you think it is, reach out because somebody out there can help you figure out your way out. There's never a situation that can't be helped somehow by reaching out. So reach out. And there's resources on the project247.org website. You can go to the resources page and find a phone number If you don't have a friend that you feel comfortable reaching out to, find a phone number of somebody that you can reach out to.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you so much, Michelle, for coming on today, sharing your beautiful energy. Your story is just so inspiring of what you are doing. Where else can people find you, especially if they want you for a speaking engagement? We'll link everything below. I know you mentioned the website. Is there anywhere else we can find you as well?
Well, if you want to follow my adventures and my misadventures, you can find me on YouTube, Checking Out America, but that's CZECH because I'm Czech. So I'm Checking Out America, and you can follow me on YouTube there, or you can go to project247.org and just go to the contact page. And if I'm unavailable, somebody else from the team will answer. And that's how you can find out how to reach me if you want to have a conversation, or if you'd like a proposal or your organization. That's where the conversation starts, is on the contact page at project247.org.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Michelle, again, just for everything you've shared. I think it's such an important topic, being able to talk about prevention of suicide and bringing awareness, how it doesn't just impact that individual, it impacts everyone around them. So really bringing awareness to that in so many capacities. Love what you're doing. And I can't wait, again, to see it just really thrive and be everywhere all over the world, because I know it's going to make a big impact.
Well, thank you so much for helping me spread the word. A lot of gratitude. Thank you.
Back at you. Well, thank you again, Michelle. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment below what was the biggest takeaway from today, and we'll see you on the next episode.